so no one would know how tired they've grown of talking and telling their lies. All we got, no health insurance, no cellular service, no disease they can cure. But we need more money to burn, so each person must learn the dollar amount they are worth.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Christine Ferguson, who is a research professor at the George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services. Previously, she was the commissioner of the Department of Public Health in Massachusetts under Governor Mitt Romney, ran the Rhode Island Department of Human Services, and served as counsel and deputy chief of staff to the late U.S. Senator John Chafee. She is recognized as one of the most influential health policy makers by Faulkner and Gray Healthcare, and one of the top 25 most influential working mothers by Working Mothers magazine. Welcome to Background Briefing, Christine Ferguson.
It's great to be here, Ian.
And we don't know, of course, what's going to happen any day now with the Supreme Court, but based upon the brief hearings that took place a few months back, it could bode ill for President Obama. The Affordable Care Act could either be cut severely or cut out altogether or left alone. What's your hunch on what's likely to happen?
You know, I learned a long time ago not to try to predict what the Supreme Court would do. I think I'm safe in saying that it's unlikely that they would overturn the entire ACA. But there are components that they could definitely touch, and those are the things that are the biggest source of discussion right now. There are very few people who think that it's going to be overturned entirely.
Well, initially, 90% of legal scholars said it wouldn't even be touched at all. And then that changed considerably, particularly after the hearings, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And you know, the closer you get to a point in time like this where there's such there are such high emotions and people feeling like they're very high stakes politically. It's like getting closer to the end of a political race, right? Everything tightens a little bit and everybody's anxieties are a little bit higher. And that's, I think, some of what you're seeing today.
But what if the individual mandate part, which was the most controversial in the discussions and is certainly the most controversial in terms of the Republican candidates, Mitt Romney wants to scrub the entire law, but the focus of most of the opposition to the Affordable Care Act is the individual mandate, and that's what the justices appear to be wrestling with. Most analysts say that if that's cut out, that's the sort of heart and soul of it. So when you say they may not cut at all, but what if they cut that part?
Well, it's interesting. So you're talking to somebody who has been actually in the trenches running healthcare programs as well as doing policy at various times. And so I look at things from a little bit different perspective than a lot of other people do. From my perspective, the fact that if the individual mandate was stripped out, the fact that the subsidies, financial assistance and the tax credits to individuals and businesses would remain in the law, as long as that's the case, for most people, affordability of healthcare and the ability to actually buy it is the key barrier to having health insurance. So the mandate from that perspective is not such a critical component of this.
I think that
if the mandate was eliminated and the rest of the bill was left intact, we would be able to implement the coverage components, and it would not be a huge blow to the system as a whole.
Well, I've been confused about it from the beginning, because the whole idea of the mandate, my understanding, is to broaden the pool, so that if the bigger the pool, and you work with Mitt Romney in Massachusetts on this, so just correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the idea of the individual mandate is to broaden the pool. But nevertheless, the enforcement mechanism for forcing people to buy insurance, even in the bill as it is not a real enforcement mechanism. There are no liens, for example. So I'm trying to understand the real mechanism. I mean, if you're saying go ahead.
Well, so a couple of things. First of all, the one other thing that's not in that bio that you read, but that might be helpful for you and your listeners to know, is that the first individual mandate bill that was put in by a group of 27 Republicans, including Bob Dole and a number of conservatives. I wrote that bill and worked with them on pulling the support for the individual mandate together. So I've been on the Republican side when we supported the individual mandate. And the point of the individual mandate was always about personal responsibility and making sure that everybody pulled their weight in the system, and so that when people went into the emergency room, we didn't expect doctors and hospitals to volunteer their time and their care for large numbers of people, that instead everybody was responsible for covering themselves. And so when you look at it from the perspective that we originally looked at it, and then when I went to Rhode Island, when I left my job, which was running the Department of Human Services and the Medicaid program, only about 6% of the entire population of Rhode Island did not have health insurance. So we didn't have an individual mandate. What we did do was we had a dominant insurer. We had a Blue Cross plan that provided coverage for the vast majority of people in the state. And we had regulation in the state. And we provided some extended Medicaid eligibility that other states didn't provide. And by doing those things, most people were able at that time to afford insurance. What happened was when the economy crashed, more and more people lost insurance. So now we're down to 88% of the population. But if you think about it from the perspective of the number of people that you're broadening the pool to and why you're trying to broaden the pool, as long as you have a way of helping people buy insurance and making sure that the price is affordable, most people are going to buy it. Ultimately, for those that are what some people call free riders in the system, right? For those people, ultimately we may have to really put some kind of an enforcement mechanism in. But I think that for the most part, we can make health insurance affordable with subsidies. The big issue would be if the court strikes the individual mandate down and some of the insurance pieces that might be tied to that, such as the guarantee that if you apply for insurance, they can't turn you down because of your health. So they can charge you differently, but they can't turn you down entirely. That if those provisions go out and the election changes the composition of Congress and the presidency significantly, and there is a movement to really remove that financial support, then I think that's really the core, the guts of the bill.
So, well, as I mentioned, you know, the candidate Romney has pledged to wipe the Obama Affordable Care Act off the books. You worked with him in Massachusetts. You ran the Department of Public Health in Massachusetts, Christine Ferguson, and you're now a research professor at the George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services and previously ran the Rhode Island Department of Human Services. Tell us about, now you told me about, which I hadn't heard before, about working on the original Republican bill with Bob Dole and other Republican senators. What is in the Massachusetts law that's different? Because that's become a source of controversy. And the assumption always has been that the White House bill was modeled in part on that. So when you were in charge of...
So the White House bill was really, if you look at it, modeled a lot on the original legislation that was worked on in a bipartisan way back in the 90s, and some of the pieces of Massachusetts were taken from that. But the thing that is troubling about any time you have a political debate is that a lot of times the facts get lost. And the big fact, and I think the thing that Governor Romney has not been able to convey adequately, and that maybe conservative Republicans aren't willing to hear, is that he didn't work on the Massachusetts bill and the Massachusetts plan in a vacuum. That was done because Massachusetts had virtually universal coverage. In other words, anybody who went into a hospital that had that didn't have the money to pay was able to get their care, and the hospital was paid. It was called the Uncompensated Care Fund, and hospitals contributed to it, and so did the federal government through Medicaid. There was something called a Medicaid waiver. That the total amount of money between what hospitals contributed and the Medicaid program contributed was close to $1 billion. And at the time that this bill was passed, essentially George Bush's administration, President Bush's administration, had told Governor Romney's administration that they would not agree to extend this Medicaid waiver unless they did some other things, one of which was around the idea of universal coverage. And so if Mitt Romney had not worked on this bill collaboratively in Massachusetts with the legislature and the business community and everybody else in the state to come up with a solution that was acceptable to the federal government in order for us to get our Medicaid waiver again, close to $1 billion of funds would have been removed from the economy of Massachusetts and from the hospital systems in Massachusetts. There isn't a governor, Republican or Democrat, in the country who would allow that to happen if there was a solution that the general population in that state was comfortable with. And that's where I think people are extrapolating that the governor would do exactly what he did in Massachusetts nationally. If he'd been in Texas, that wouldn't have even have been an issue. It wouldn't have even been on the radar screen. So I think that what Romney's trying to talk about is the fact that, you know, for the country as a whole, he has a different opinion. I don't agree with him on this. But having said that, I also think it's okay to disagree, right? I don't believe you can extrapolate the Massachusetts experience to the rest of the country because there was a very different set of circumstances there. So I think it's the wrong position for Republicans to take. I've always thought Republicans run away from health care and they use it. They don't think about it in a way that is helpful often. And that's just a place that we disagree within the party. There are plenty of moderate Republicans, those of us who are left, who have a different position. But it's okay to have this dialogue because the dialogue is important to as the healthcare system evolves. But the core issue right now is, will the Supreme Court overturn the individual mandate? And if they do, can the implementation of the bill continue? And the one thing I can tell you is that in state capitals across the country that where I talk to people, even the states that are not visibly moving forward are preparing to move forward if only the mandate is struck down. And that's because there is this influx of money that will come in to support people in their ability to buy coverage through these exchanges. So states are getting ready to do that.
Well, some of the benefits are already being seen, aren't they, Christine Ferguson? Particularly the coverage for young adult children by their parents, that's quite popular. But you're telling us, though, that you don't believe, even a lot of the states have sued the Obama administration already over the Affordable Care Act, you think that if the individual mandate is not upheld by the Supreme Court, that they will work with the bill and implement it, even the ones that have sued?
Well, if the individual mandate is overturned, but nothing else in the bill is overturned, then all of the requirements remain. And there aren't a whole lot of states that are going to give up expansions in federal funding for healthcare coverage. Because if you think about it from a practical perspective, those expansions, that money, isn't going to the state. And it's not even really going to individuals. It's going to the hospitals and the doctors and the healthcare system in the state so that it can actually pay for people who are either not getting important care now or alternatively are getting that care because it's emergency-based, but none of the providers are being paid for it. So the money isn't really going to the states. It's not even really going to the individuals. The money is going to the healthcare system so that it can continue to provide care and services to people who are either already using it or in need of using it. And that I think really creates a problem at the end of the day because at that point, if you choose not to implement it, you're basically telling your hospitals and your doctors and your healthcare system that it's okay for them to continue to operate the way they are and provide services to people without payment, and that you as a state are more concerned with the principle of the issue than the practicality of it. And so I know that that's controversial and I'll probably get hate mail because of it, but I think at this point, the healthcare system is struggling, and with the economy the way it is, it's a real problem. And so we need to find a way to make sure that we can provide the care that's going to help people with their productivity, that's going to help people be able to work more effectively. All of those things are really critical to the future of the country, I think.
So you believe that at the end of the day that the major players in the health insurance industry and the provider community really don't want to see this Affordable Care Act overturned, and that the states that are unprepared to carry out the critical requirements, such as creating these insurance markets, you feel that a lot of that's rhetoric. When it comes down to it, they will accept it.
But I think that a lot of it's rhetoric. I think that some of it is real and heartfelt. But at the end of the day, the practicality of the situation is going to kind of overtake it. You basically have a series of insurance reforms, one of which you talked about, which was the parents being able to cover their kids. But there are many other things like that in the bill that have already gone into effect. And for an insurance company to stop providing those things is going to be very difficult. And for a state to say, oh, okay, now you don't have to do that, is going to, from a practical perspective, be difficult. Because once people have something, it's kind of the antithesis of what we've been talking about with healthcare reform, right?
Sure.
People don't understand what it's going to mean to them. They don't understand, they don't know whether it's going to cost them money or save them money. They don't know if their benefits are going to be better or worse. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and they don't like uncertainty. They know what they have. So it's easy to attack it. On the other side, those things that have already gone into effect and people have them, they're not unpopular things. And so you don't see a lot of people saying, oh, you should never have allowed me to do this.
Right.
What they're saying is, no, you can't take that away from me, right? So now you've got a situation where you've got some of the bill in effect, people getting comfortable with it, and the thought that, oh, that's going to be withdrawn and not kept is a problem. But from a policy perspective, from congressional perspective, in order to keep those things intact in the law, there are a whole bunch of other things that they can't remove. So well, it's kind of like it's a ball of yarn, right? It's very hard to unravel pieces in the middle
right.
and keep the rest intact. And that's the challenge that they're going to have unless the whole thing is just flat out overturned.
Well, just in closing then, Christine Ferguson, assuming that the most likely thing, and not that either of us are soothsayers or clairvoyants, but assuming that the individual mandate is stripped out by the court, you think that it could actually function? How do you create the broader pool, which is the whole purpose of the individual mandate? That makes a lot of sense.
The core issue, if you look back in the economic period before the crash of 2008, and you look at those states that had high coverage levels above 90%, those states really had, for all practical purposes, pretty close to universal coverage with no individual mandate. The reason that they had that was that there were subsidy programs like Medicaid, that helped people buy insurance. So they defrayed the total cost of insurance so that individuals could buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, employers were able to pay chunks of coverage. Once that ability to defray the cost to an individual family was removed because the economy went south, you saw a reduction in the numbers of people covered. So what I'm saying is that even without the individual mandate, if the subsidies to individuals and businesses and the Medicaid expansion are left intact, which it appears they probably would be in terms of the Supreme Court, then that ability to defray individual costs is what's going to cause people to have insurance, because it's going to be affordable to them.
Sure.
And
well,
so you'll see higher levels of coverage.
Right. Well, that we know. I think that makes sense. But whether the economy is going to recover soon, that's the big question. So,
that's a whole other question.
I agree. And another discussion. I thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Christine Ferguson, who's a research professor at the George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services. Previously, she was the commissioner of the Department of Public Health in Massachusetts under Governor Mitt Romney and ran the Rhode Island Department of Human Services and served as counsel and deputy chief of staff for the late U.S. Senator John Chafee. She's recognized as one of the most influential health policymakers by Faulkner and Gray Healthcare and one of the top 25 most influential working mothers by Working Mothers Magazine. And we're going to take a brief station break now and be back with Mother Jones's Andy Kroll, who feels that electoral politics sold out the popular uprising in Wisconsin.
Tell me, how can a poor man stand such time than me? Well, the doctor comes around with a face so bright, and he says in a little while you'll be all right. All he gives is a humbug pill, no salt, dope, and a great big bill. Tell me, how can a poor man stand such time than live?